Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Talking Comics Podcast. Today is Wednesday, January 27th, 2021. It's the first time I ever said 2021 on this show. Woo-hoo! And you're listening to episode number 479. I will be your host this week. I am Joey Ricino, and joining me is Mr. Bob Reier.
I thought they voted him out. Oh, that's me. Sorry.
Me? They voted me out? I wasn't on the show last week. But anyway, Aaron Amos is also here.
Whee!
And joining us, now occupying a regular seat at the table, representing the heartland, Mr. John Burkle is here.
I better get my sayings in before they kick me out.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
You gotta come up with some catchphrases and like shticks, you know.
We're playing here in the Midwest.
No, what do they call it in office space? No flair?
No flair hair. I don't have my seven pieces of flair.
Yes. Welcome, John. Steve is a little busy this week, so he's going to sit this one out. And Sarah's got an off week, so it's just the boys this time around. They gave me the con again, first time in 2021. I'm very excited. And as my first order of business, I say that I get to talk about WandaVision this week because all of y'all talked about it at length last week, spreading all these conspiracy theories that are totally wrong. And now since I have the con, I will be setting the record straight.
Hater.
We have more, I'm sure. We have many more conspiracy theories.
Yes, yes.
We can go in so many different directions if you want.
Well, you know, I think that's the benefit of doing the week-to-week with that Marvel and Disney are doing. The conversation never stops. But anyway, tons of things to talk about this week. DC Universe Infinite launched. It kind of looks like DC Universe Old Finite, but we could talk about that too. The trailer for Godzilla versus Kong also dropped earlier this week. That's coming to HBO Max and theaters on March 26, 2021. There was some interest in talking about that as well. We're big fans of those monster movies here on the show. And then obviously tons and tons and tons of comics. Future State rages on. Tons of Future State representation today too. So lots to talk about. Where to start? Let's start with Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
I know. Let's just blow this open. Godzilla versus Kong trailer dropped. There's a little bit of a teaser image of it when HBO Max was talking about all the movies that were going to be released on streaming this year. Warner Brothers dropped the official trailer. I suppose. Is it Warner Brothers or Legendary? It might be Legendary.
Through Warner Brothers.
Drop the trailer. Some familiar faces in there. Obviously, Godzilla versus Kong. There's not much to talk about. A lot of the trailers just them punching each other. I'm not going to get into it too much, but I know we got some big fans on the show. So let's start with Bob. Reactions to the Godzilla versus Kong trailer.
I had forgotten that they were going to do the a trailer drop over the weekend. I was sitting watching the late football game, and all of a sudden they even did a 30-second spot there. Go to YouTube and watch our trailer. So, okay, I'll pause the football game and go watch Monsters. Here's the thing. The first two Godzillas and Kong of Skull Island are kind of a mixed bag. There are some problems with each of them. But they are immense fun to just sit and wrap your brain around an old-fashioned monster movie. And this one, where we've upped Kong to – he's now a grown-up, so he can stand toe-to-toe with the big G, and he's got a trick or two up his sleeve, it looks like. It just rocked. That's what I want to say. I want to see big fighting monsters. There's some mystery as about why Godzilla's doing what he's doing, which I kind of like. We get some human characters that the critics complained when there were too many human characters and then complained when there weren't enough. Hopefully we get the right mix. I frankly don't care as long as we've got some monster fest and it makes sense. I love the whole, there's a little girl angle, so maybe it's time back to sort of the old Mothra with the little twin peanuts over there. I can't wait. And the thing is, I see lots of people saying you have to see this in IMAX. Good luck with that.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So go to my friend Ed's and his 8-foot television and we'll crank up the 7.1 surround. We'll be good to go.
Yeah. And just sit really close.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I was watching the trailer and I was like, but why is Godzilla a bad guy? Because, like, you know, they set him up in those first two movies to be, like, you know, king of the monsters. He saves the day. Spoilers. He's great. Very charming, even though he's a giant CGI monster. I actually really love Kong, Skull Island, Kong, whatever it's called. I think that's a really fantastic, like, war movie. Like, the cast is awesome. And I just really... found that movie very, very charming. And then obviously like the post credits there and the continuation into the Godzilla versus Kong stuff. I was really excited and then forgot about promptly. so that's the thing with this universe. Like anytime they announce a new movie, like when Kong Skull Island dropped, I was like, they're making a King Kong movie. And I went and saw it and loved it. Same thing with King of the Monsters. I was like, there's the King of the Monsters movie. And I loved it. So, I am also very, very, very excited for it. I thought the trailer was really explosive. I loved King Kong, like, jumping out of the way of things and the sheer panic on his gorilla face. I thought was so great. So I think the effects look fantastic as well. John, did you get a chance to watch it?
I did. My son is about – he's 7. He'll be 8 this summer. And we got him into Godzilla about a year ago. And I bought him a bunch of old Blu-rays of the old, you know, the guy in the rubber suit. And then I got him Kong. And I think I like that movie more than he does. But that's one of those movies I'll just sit and watch whenever it's on. I don't care where I pick it up. I'm in that. That's just one of the – that's just a great monster movie. And the Godzilla movies, yeah, they're good. There's some flaws. I thought that the King of the Monsters, my eyes hurt at the end of it because it was so dark. But I just like this joined universe. And when we were sitting there, I was devastated by the Packers loss. And then it's like, ooh, Godzilla versus Kong. We watched the trailer. And yeah, the excitement ramped up. I'm glad that Warner Brothers and Legendary and HBO figured it out that they could do this on HBO Max. Because I know that was a bone of contention. Because I don't really want to go to a theater, but I really want to see this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Aaron, you didn't get a chance to watch it, right?
Nope.
Any fandom for Godzilla or King Kong?
I still love the movies from when I was a kid. So I guess that was when I was a kid, I think it was in the 70s or so. For some reason, it seemed like it was always on Sundays that they would all come on like back to back. So you'd see your Godzilla movies back to back. I love those. So from a nostalgia perspective, yeah, this is there. But I don't know. I didn't feel... you know, starting back with what is it, Matthew Broderick and crew?
That one doesn't count.
It sort of deadened my my joy for modern day representations of these things. It's almost like you can't go home again.
Well, yeah, I agree though. But Aaron, most people in this country never got to see the fact that through the 80s and 90s and the early 2000s, Toho was still making Godzilla movies, and most of them were pretty good.
Yeah,
really.
One year.
There was still guys in suits for the most part, and the effects were definitely ramped up. My favorite of that bunch, I know, John. I'm sure you've seen all of them too. Joey, I know you have. It's GMK.
Yeah.
Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, giant monsters, all out attack. Now, from a title like that, Aaron, that has to be right up your alley.
Yeah, maybe some. Maybe I'll YouTube it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. It's.
I don't think I've ever been more proud of my son is because of the way the Godzilla movies, like every 10 movie, they sell like a new universe or something.
Yep.
And my son's like, well, it's like a multiverse, Dad. There's all these different Godzillas. Wow. I was like, you are truly my son.
He's like wait till the crisis.
I've never been more proud of you. You understand the multiverse.
I have a theory. I have a Godzilla theory, by the way, John.
What's that?
Joey, do you want to hear? I think Charles Dance is involved.
Oh, in this one?
Yeah.
With the Ghidorah head and all that?
Yeah. I think.
Did he get away in the last one?
Yeah, he's in the post-credit sequence.
Post-credit scene.
Oh, I thought he got fish crushed or something. Scene.
No, it's a whole thing.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
He was the
Tywin Lannister.
Tywin Lannister in Game of Thrones.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
anyway, I'm sure we'll talk more about Godzilla versus Kong. It's coming out in 2 months. Crazy.
March.
Steve is much better at this than I am. But for the record, Godzilla versus Kong is directed by Adam Wingard. It is the fourth entry in Legendary's MonsterVerse. And as of right now, the last film announced for that MonsterVerse. So we'll see if that's going anywhere else after this. They were talking about like a Pacific Rim crossover, which would be fun, but does anybody really want that? I don't know. Anyway, cool. Next point of order on the agenda is DC Universe Infinite relaunched, rebooted this past week. As y'all know, at the end of last year, I bit the bullet and got DC Universe and loved it. I was able to read a ton of comics that I have not been able to read in the same way that I do on Marvel Universe all the time. But the problem with that, obviously, was its kind of limitations. It didn't necessarily have a huge catalog, and it was kind of a multimedia thing. Lots of TV, movies on there, too. It was kind of a one-stop shop. And now DC Universe Infinite, their kind of rebranding, ostensibly is going to be the kind of Marvel Universe equivalent comics-focused app. Aaron, have you been clicking around on DC Universe Infinite?
I have. I the day that it came, I remember the date for some reason. I was just like, wait a second, the 22nd. I think it starts today. That's when I put it in the chat. So I started flipping through. And it was a little interesting, a little weird to sort of, it's interesting that it's called DC Universe Infinite when it actually like eliminated a good portion of what it was offering previously. So I'm like, well, it's not infinite then, is it?
No.
But it's interesting because I feel like there's things in here that I'm seeing that I wasn't seeing before, mostly the Black Label stuff.
Yes, and Vertigo stuff.
And Vertigo.
And the Vertigo stuff. And I'm just like, wait a second. Hold on. So I was like flipping through that stuff. I started slapping things in my favorites folder. I'm like coming back to that. Going to do that. So yeah, I'm excited to keep to go back and sort of see. I'll be honest with you. I am perfectly fine with them yanking all of the multimedia stuff out and slapping it over there on HBO Max. If they really do the deep dive into the DC Comics universe that I think I've always wanted them to do, even when they first started, I felt like there was a lot that they put in there when they first launched it that I was very much, engaged in. Mm-hmm. Because there were things that I never would have, gone to the shop to read. And I know I keep coming back to Starman for something, but I never would have gone anywhere to pick up a Starman book. But, the Robinson Starman. But, just having that in here and being able to go through and seeing sort of the different vibe and the tone of that book, in relation to, reading Justice Society from that same general era. Yeah. It was a good opportunity to sort of get engaged and see what DC was at the time. But after a while, you did begin to realize that there were some limitations to it, especially because of the year that it would wait before putting basically being a year behind in comics. So now that I think that's reduced to 6 months, and it looks like they definitely expanded the offerings, I'm sort of like, okay, well, it's sort of reinvigorated. Let me check it out. Mm-hmm. So maybe I will now go back and read all that deceased stuff and that Leviathan stuff and see what's going on with that. And I guess, Joey, now you can wrap up Wonder Twins, can't you?
I did, and it was awesome. and I will say that Leviathan is awesome. John, do you have DC Universe?
Yeah, I took the die. I had it when it first came out with all of the multimedia, but I let it drop because I just wasn't using it. But when they said they're going to be comic specific, I went back and re-upped my subscription. And I'm the same way. It's like I have a lot of that stuff like in trade and somewhere, but having it just available is so convenient. I find myself going more to DC Infinite and Marvel Unlimited just to read back issues, then you know, going down and digging through everything. And it is nice to have all those old 70s and 60s and 80s, you know, just available, because, you know, they're not always the greatest stories, but it's just fun. And mm-hmm. if you just got a few minutes or a few, you know, a little bit of time to waste, you just go read some, you know, John Byrne Superman, or go back and read some classic Kurt Swan era Superman and stuff like that. It's just, I just enjoy having it all at my fingertips. And as long as they're updating it more, the year wait was a bit much. And I don't know why DC procrastinates on putting things out, because if you want to get people in, give them, you know, like Marvel's 3 months now. Let's just do that.
Yeah. So I think you made exactly the perfect point, because I was going to say earlier that one of the benefits I take out of it, for example, this past Saturday, after I realized on Friday that it came out Okay, I realize how I'm going to sound. So first world problems. I have a treadmill that I bought during quarantine that's in my living room. So hate me, whatever. Okay. So I basically just grabbed my iPad, you know, jumped on the treadmill and start poking around. And next thing you know, I'm like sweating my gonads off, because it's like 45 minutes later. And I've like just read, I think I reread the Wonder Woman Nubia storyline again mm-hmm. for some reason. I was just like, yeah, it's here. Why not just,
you know, why not
read it again? Yeah. And, you know, next thing you know, it's 45 minutes later and you know, just got that sort of buzz through, you know, some things that you probably just wouldn't have had available to you. So I definitely appreciate it. Again, as long as they continue to go deeper, you know, into the DC universe, I'm on board. It's almost like it's been reinvented.
Yeah.
Two things is, like, one is, in terms of DC not getting this stuff out for a lot of reasons, I have a feeling, and this is just from my gut and nothing else, I don't think they have the infrastructure to do it. I think that they did not have a digitizing kind of like impetus for a long time. And I think that with this relaunch, I think it motivated them to do so. And the first thing that when you open the app up, first of all, like I was saying at the top of the show, I opened the app up and I was like, Aaron, are you sure they changed it? Because it looks exactly the same. Like the UI is exactly the same. How it looks, like the big headers and everything. And then I realized, like, yeah, it's totally different. And you click on comics, because it only says comics now at the bottom. Click on comics, and the first thing it says is, like, one of the first things up there, because it's in alphabetical, is Action Comics. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Action Comics, 990 issues.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, they really did it. They digitized everything.
Yep. And Joey started at one.
Started at number one, yeah. I've actually read number one. And there's a great piece I wrote on Action Comics number one. You can read it on talkingcomicbooks.com. But anyway... And I was scrolling through, and there's a ton of stuff that looks like it's like going back. We're talking like golden age stuff, which is, to be frank, even Marvel Unlimited doesn't have a lot of that. That's the corner of Marvel Unlimited that they slowly kind of like add on to like a lot of that kind of older stuff. So DC Comics, you know, I think really did a really nice job with this reboot of it. And I think, as you were saying, like the Black Label stuff, there's a lot there. The Vertigo stuff is there as well. The one thing I'll say is I think the UI does need some tweaking, because I find it particularly hard to like scroll through and find stuff. It's hard. I don't want to compare it to Marvel Unlimited that much, but I mean, I have to, because those are the two apps. I think that because of the kind of just lead time that Marvel Unlimited had on DC Universe Infinite, you know, Marvel has like the top banner of like recommendations. Yeah. It's organized by like very curated lists. And the other thing that I like about it is that it's like a list of things and not tiles. DC Universe Infinite has these like tiles of like each title, as opposed to like just a list. And it's actually hard for my brain to process that and find what I want to read. I think it's just going to take some time to kind of get the kinks out, but I am really, really excited to like just pile stuff onto my read list, because I have read so many things through like Marvel Unlimited that, as you were saying, John and Aaron, like, I would have never read or just, like, went back and reread. Like, right now I'm doing this Shang-Chi reread. Like, I'm not going to go buy the Marvel Masterworks, like, 8 volumes of Marvel Masterworks, like, Master of Kung Fu. They're, like, I'm not going to find those, first of all, and I'm not going to get them. But they're all there for me to read at my own pace, which is just great. And now I have that same thing with DC Universe. And I think that it is pretty up to date, and I'm excited to, like, jump in and just read.
Yeah, I will say, first of all, I am ride or die. I've had DC Universe since the beginning, and I never let it go. We never broke up. But I think I'm gonna add to one thing you said, Joey, about why they aren't, you know, where they need to be right now. I think part of it is because they really, really believed that the majority of the focus when they initially launched DC Universe was going to be on the TV shows, was going to be on the new content that they put out there. And I think for those reasons, they probably didn't give all of their attention to the comics catalog. I think they probably thought, well, the people are going to come to the front door because they're going to watch Titans, and they're going to want to watch Harley Quinn, and they're going to want to watch all those other shows, Swamp Things, that, you know, they only put out there for a season, but whatever. And they never anticipated that those things wouldn't be the big win. Now, this was, of course, remember in the beginning, they really thought that this was going to blow up, and it made a noise, but it didn't blow up the way they thought it would. And I think immediately they began to look towards HBO Max, you know, to sort of offload some of that stuff and sort of scale down. And I think that's when they said, okay, let's just, you know, I believe that's at some point where someone had a come to Jesus talk internally and said, you know what? It's cheaper to just throw these things out here, you know, give the nerds what they want, not worry about bringing in, you know, there's two sides of this house. There's a side of the house that is pure nerd and purely wants to go back into our comic history and sit there and sort of just revel in it. And then there are those people that are just coming for the bright colors and superheroes that are in the weekly shows and the CW-verse and the Arrowverse and all that stuff. Separate those two, we'll be fine. I kind of think that's kind of the theories they had.
I think Warner Brothers is just restructuring everything, and this kind of just falls into that. Like, they're going to have the media side and then the comic side and just keep them separate now.
Yeah.
What are they going to for this? What is the charge?
$8. I think, annually, I think it's $70, which is about the same as Marvel Unlimited. And I think as we were saying, the lead time is new books are 6 months behind. So.
Yeah, 6 months. Yeah.
And Marvel Unlimited, I think, is going to be 3. So I'm going to be honest. I have both apps. I love having both apps. They're both spectacular. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the main takeaway here is finally we have a kind of equal footing between the two.
I will tell you, just the last thing, I will say that it used to be the case when I would go through the cons, you know, back when we could go to cons, and we'd be walking through, you know, Bob, and we'd be walking through the floor, like going through the bins and everything, trying to find the old things. I'd usually say, well, I don't really need to get this Avengers book because it's on Marvel Unlimited. I'm like, oh crap, now I'm gonna do the same. It's the same thing as I'm going through. I'm like, well, it's on DC Universe, so I'm fine.
I get less excited when I see collections and previews. I'm like, it's on Marvel Unlimited, I don't need to buy that again.
But what that, and we've actually been talking as well about, like, how do we manage our pull lists, it allowed me to buy Wicked and Divine. It allowed me to buy, you know, Kill or Be Killed, right? Over an Image, like, and Backstagers, and, like, buy the single issues of Backstagers, and then also buy the collections. Like, I didn't feel as bad because I knew that, like, you know, I love, I don't know, what's a book? All New X Factor. I'm just lying. I bought that single issue too. But anyway, like, I didn't kill All New X Factor, Bob. It wasn't me. but anyway, it's like, oh, I don't necessarily need to go single issue here, or I don't need to buy trades of these books that I really like because I know I have it on Marvel Unlimited.
Well, talking about Master Kung Fu, I bought, like, all 3 of the big omnibus because they weren't available anywhere. And then, you know, lo and behold, a year later, they're all on Marvel Unlimited. So I rethink, you know, like, do I want to buy this now, or do I just want to wait to see if they're going to put it on one of their platforms next? So yeah, and it saves up some coin for things like excellence and more image books.
Yeah. I will say the one thing that is not on Marvel Unlimited that I did spring for was that Alias omnibus.
Yes.
I did too.
It is too naughty.
Too naughty for Marvel.
Marvel Unlimited.
I did the same thing.
They need like an 18-year-old and plus section of the that you have to like do a finger ID or something.
That's why I was shocked when I opened up DC Universe and it's like, read our Black Label books. And I was like, okay, we're just going right in with the naughty stuff.
My first word was bat dong.
Bob was with me when I bought my Alias omnibus with at the con. I was like, we got to wait it out. I'm like, it's going to get cheaper over the weekend. I saw it like on the Friday and I'm like, no, we got to wait it out till Sunday.
And did you get a bargain?
I think I whittled them down. I'm not kidding. I think I like knocked like $35 off of that.
Yeah.
It's expensive. I sprung for it because the first printing of it sold out and it took like 5 years for them to print it again. It was crazy.
I think I got it for like $150 or something like that. $140.
That's a great price. Yeah.
That's awesome.
On a quick aside, did anyone see the news about Brian Michael Bendis not being exclusive to DC?
I saw that. Oh, yeah.
I did not.
He's a
when
freak.
Did this drop?
Yesterday.
Yeah, he's Marvel or Warner's not doing long-term contracts anymore. So he's a free agent, really.
Oh, boy.
He can do work for hire for any publisher.
Is Scarlet going to be the first creator-owned book that exists at Marvel, Image, and DC?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, goodness, that's hilarious.
Astro said he never made it to Marvel.
No.
But yeah, but his page rate dropped because he's non-exclusive, but he can do more things. So the only thing he ended his Superman run early, they said, because of this. And so he's just doing the Justice League book. And then if he wants to go back and play around in the Marvel universe, it sounds like that's open to him.
You know, the one book that I thought he was going to be on and he just never got to was FF, right? He never really did a Fantastic Four run.
No, he didn't.
He touched Avengers. He touched X-Men.
He did do the first Ultimate Fantastic Four with Miller, but that doesn't count, right?
Yeah, I don't count any of that.
Yeah, we don't count any of that. Come on. The Ultimate Universe was awesome for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then everyone's been that thing on Twitter has been going around like, what is a comic book page that lives in your head rent free? And I've seen so many tweets that were like, that page in Ultimatum 3.
Oh, Jesus.
I couldn't come up with anything. I kept thinking, I'm like, nothing. I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah. Blob eating the wasp.
Blob eating the wasp.
Yeah. Anyway, Bob.
Yeah.
Lightning round.
Oh, okay.
Hard shift.
Say when.
When?
Okay. Abbott 1973, number one by Saladin Ahmed, Sammy Cavella, Matea Iacono, and Jim Campbell. Picks up the story of Elena Abbott as she starts her new job at the Detroit Chronicle, that city's most prominent black newspaper. The evil forces of the Umbra are still keeping Ms. Abbott in their crosshairs as her role as the new lightbringer, well, it foiled their plans the last time out. And might the potential election of Motown's first African-American mayor be tied into their schemes this time? Once again, Abbott is a wonderful slice of 70s goodness, using that era's style and socio-political mores to great effect in Mr. Ahmed's story, and Sammy Cavella's art captures both the mood of that time and the heightening horror perfectly. Miskatonic number 3 by Mark Sable, Giorgio Pontrelli, Pippa Boland, and Thomas Moore brings even more characters and plot elements to bear from Lovecraft's fiction in a way that never seems forced, letting them in at just the right pace. I spoke at length about this last episode, so I'll just say that if you're a fan of HPL's work, you'll certainly want to pick this one up. And a quick aside, just as Lovecraft Country made certain to address some of the thornier issues surrounding Lovecraft's both covert and obvious racist views in his works, Mr. Sable ties them in here, although maybe not in such an upfront way, but they do make sure to put that in play. Batman Catwoman number 2 by Tom King, Clay Mann, Tomu Morey, and Clayton Cowles. Well, it just continues along its trifurcated way, with one of the paths being tread by Andrea Beaumont one of the greatest Batman films of all time, animated or live action, Mask of the Phantasm. This fabulous character work at play across the various timelines of Bruce, Selina, and the Joker – except in one very male-gazy page, the art is quite striking. Now, I'm not sure how much of this story arc by Mr. King would have been part of his Batman run Endgame, as it probably would have broken DC's continuity and sent some editors scurrying for the closets, but I'm thrilled to be able to see it now, even if it's just going to be an Elseworlds title that doesn't count as such. Finally, a quick note on the premiere episode of Season 2 of Batwoman. As Ryan Wilder, as well as our new Batwoman, Javicia Leslie is quite excellent. The problem is the show around her is a hot mess. There's lots... I'm sorry. There's lots of, and not totally unwarranted, weeping over the absence of Kate Kane, but that's takes all the focus off of Ryan, who's now a supporting player in someone else's story, and someone who, to my mind anyway, has been fridged out of her own as well. It is some ridiculous coincidence to make it all kind of fit, and I'm not going to go there because some may be catching up on this. I'm just not impressed by this. I really let down. I was hopeful, but nope. Tried the second one. Didn't help. I think I'm out. And that's me.
I'm sorry if you've addressed this, but do they explain away Kate Kane?
The first episode begins with an airplane crash that just happens to fall right next to Ryan's van, and she picks up the bat suit.
Oh, convenient.
Yeah, right? So let's go for it. And we also tie in the fact that apparently Alice and her goons are the people who've killed Ryan Wilder's foster mother.
Hey, you know, you got to tie it all together.
It's ridiculous. And it just, it's still the old show, but now with somebody else in the lead, but not that lead, she's really good in both parts. There's some lovely stuff going on, but the show itself, they should have just moved on and just said it's a new Batwoman, it's a new time, it's before that, it's after that, it's another city, and she eventually hooks up with Luke Fox or whatever. But making trying to fit her story into this one isn't serving either one of them very well, to my mind. Now, the ratings have been awful.
Oh man,
yeah, I heard they dropped 80%.
Yeah, and they were down about 60%. From the last version of the show, even as the premiere. And yeah, I saw that. Yeah, you go down 80%, you're in trouble.
That's rough.
I just started watching that on HBO Max. I might have to stop. I just watched the first season. So maybe not now.
I do want to get to Abbott because I love Abbott. But Batman Catwoman number 2. First of all, I agree with you. I think Clayman's works. It's just... He's really grown as an artist, I think, in a really good way. I remember, you know, reading his when he was like on the Gambit book way back when.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And I was always like kind of taken with his character work, but it was always just a little scratchy, kind of not as defined as it needed to be. But I think Batman Catwoman looks great. I was shocked by the ending of number 2. I think with this series, I think I need to let a couple of issues sit and then read them in a bunch. And I think that for me with Tom King's Batman, I think that's actually how I always liked reading Tom King's Batman. Somehow those issues just like go by so fast and there's so much story in it and the transitions are just so like just hard that it sometimes like just feels like it just blows past me. And I think that for me, at least, I think I need to read a series of issues together. I like it though. I think, like you said, I think it's a really great iteration of Batcat. Batcat's my favorite thing. It's why I've been reading Batman for the last 3 years for the first time ever. and I think that and even in the future state stuff, like anytime a Batcat thing, even a Batcat reference happens, I'm like, what? Like my head like pokes up. I'm like, yes, here we go. So I'm totally in. I think I just need to like collect a few issues and then read them together. I think that's how I'm going to do it.
John, did you get to read Batcat?
No, the owner of my comic shop came down with COVID, and so they've been closed for the week, and so they're reopening tomorrow. So I'll have 2 weeks worth of books So I got to catch up on that. But I'm with Joey. I think, come on, Tom King reads better in a chunk. Like, I'm right now, I'm just waiting for Strange Adventures to be done, and I'm going to read the whole thing. Just because I think his narrative works better that way. But no, I'll catch up with it tomorrow. But I agree. Clay Mann, Heroes in Crisis was great. And then that first issue, I think he's a star in the making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Abbott 1973, I'm so glad that's back. I love that first volume. I didn't think we were going to get more. And then here we are, Abbott 1973. I think the universe is great. I've just so taken with kind of the combination of like this like fantasy horror angle plus the hard-boiled journalist detective stuff going on. I think just the merging of those two genres is just really wonderful. And I think Sammy Cavala nails it. I think it's just beautiful. I think it's a really cool book.
It is. If I were going to give it the elevator pitch, this is a mashup between Kolchak the Night Stalker and Foxy Brown.
Yeah.
And it works on both levels. It is really, yeah. She's a great character who's seen a lot and continues to, she's going to press on and do it. You got to love Elaine Abbott.
It's just cool. It's like a cool book. And like you read it and you can hear it. Like that doesn't happen with a lot of books. Like, but you read this book, Abbott 1973, and you can kind of just like hear the soundtrack playing while reading it. And I think that just like, I love Saladin Ahmed. I think he's just a really great writer. I think Sammy Cavala has really come along as well. I think like this book has such a wonderful energy to it. And that it's like a boom book is also kind of cool. Like it's not the kind of book I would kind of associate with that line. So everything about it just really makes it a special series to me.
With you. Mm-hmm. Anybody? Cool. Joey, I know you and I were on Abbott the first time around really early on. And I think we certainly got everyone else jazzed about it. John, have either you or Aaron checked out?
Not yet. It's on my to-do list.
It's actually in my, because I have Comixology Unlimited, I've actually borrowed it and it's sort of sitting staring at me in my collection. I just haven't read it yet.
Aaron, you'll love it.
Dude, if you like Justice League Dark,
I want to read
a strong black woman, read Abbott. Because
apparently we won't have it in the Green Lantern anymore, Far Sector, but you know.
Oh, ouch. We feel your pain. It's absolutely.
Whatevs.
All right, cool. Aaron.
Okay, let's go. All right. So I got, I guess technically not three books. Well, I guess three books. Anyway, I'm going to start with Seven Secrets, Tom Taylor. So, I never pronounced his name correctly. I don't know if it's Daniil or Daniel or whatever, DiNicolo, and Walter Biamonte. So essentially we have this situation, as we talked about with the last issue, where things really ramped up. You have the high speed, high velocity caper that's going on. And basically you have Casper and the rest of the Order on the run, basically trying to get away from Amon. Well, now it's not necessarily Amon anymore, but some, I don't know, cracked out. I don't know who she is, but she's got them all on the run. Every time they think they have something planned out, every time they think they have their escape all secured, something else comes up and it becomes evident that someone somewhere is playing their hand for them, and it's not going well for them. And they're making incurring some serious losses and some serious sacrifices, and uncovering some things. And it becomes more and more of a complicated, web, but still, high adventure. And I'm loving every bit of it. And I would love to see this on film somewhere or in a series or something like that. But or even just animated. It's just a really, really fun story. I feel like we're going into another sort of area of it. I think previously the first six so far, and I don't know how many issues this is. I don't know if this is ongoing. I was under the impression this was a limited run, but it seems like the first six were very, very hard sort of Assassin's Creed type order stuff. Very, very, very straightforward order stuff. And now it seems like it's going a little bit into a sort of destiny, sort of a metaphysical type world that should be an interesting twist and turn. Again, I'm getting that whole Mummy Returns vibe, so I'm all in and I'm just loving it so far. So I would continue to recommend that book. Next, we have Legion of Superheroes number 12, Brian Michael Bendis, Ryan Sook, Jordy Belair, who, because of course, Jordy Belair is doing everything. So I was under the impression that number 12 was the last issue, but maybe it's not because of the way it ended. So essentially, you know, everything has come kind of full circle with John Kemp being brought into, you know, the 31st century. Essentially to try to fulfill, not necessarily fulfill a prophecy, but to do a couple of things that would hopefully save the universe, bring him forward to sort of be inspired to go back and inspire them. It's a very timey-wimey, very weird thing that they put in play there. But, you know, sometimes, you know, history has a way of finding you and sort of throwing a wrench into the program. And so that's kind of what happens now. He finds himself having some issues with his great-great-great-great-great-whatever grandson. Mon-El, as well as some issues from the past, some bad seeds from the past that want to sort of close the book on the whole House of El, you know, in the future. Huge battle, a lot of things going on, a lot of showcase legionnaires that pop into the, you know, interview. So I think it's a fun book again, just to watch and see. Now, all that being said, I don't know what this book's purpose is. I really don't. Because in 12 issues, it really has jumped from an adventure book to a political book to a history book to a, I'm not really sure what the goal is. And it's been, you know, we had a through line of stay tuned and you'll get more details later happening there. But we haven't quite gotten all those details. But you know what? And I'll give it a pass because I just love seeing all the Legionnaires pop up on the page. So it is what it is. So the last book I want to talk about is something that just sort of fell into my lap that I was not expecting, but I'd heard a little bit about, and I decided to give it a shot. Barbalian 1-3. Mm-hmm. I feel like it might've been talked about on the show. Maybe someone mentioned it at some point, and maybe in some of our offline conversations or something. I can't remember.
Sarah did.
There you go. I thought so. So I decided to give it a shot. Jeff Lemire, Gabriel Hernandez-Walta, and Tate Bromble. I was trying to think of a way to sort of just distill it down into a single sentence. And the only thing that popped in my mind was it's sort of like a Justice League meets Pose meets Angels in America. and it really sort of jumped out at me because if you recall, I think in one of our previous conversations, it might have been the last show or maybe the episode before that, I talked about, you know, always having the question in the back of your mind is why – you know, if we look at these comics as being a part of our universe and historically speaking, aligned with events that were happening, you know, throughout history, you have to ask yourself, why would heroes like the Justice League or the Avengers or whomever allow things like civil rights violations to occur and not really address them? Or things like the AIDS crisis and not really address them or all these things. So this book actually sort of takes that on. And you essentially have there's analogs of the you know, DC Comics heroes. Well, and this one is just one so far. The first three, there's just one so far. And it's basically you have an analog of John Jones called Mark Mars, which is kind of funny to me, but, essentially, he finds himself in this city that is clearly supposed to be an analog for New York. But, you know, he finds himself being, you know, thrust into the gay underground and sort of being challenged to answer the question of, you know, oh, by the way, I should say that he's also posing in his shape-shifting form as a police officer. But he finds himself, you know, being challenged by the reality that the people that he works for and works with as he's on Earth are persecuting these, you know, gays and gays who are sort of trying to fight for their very survival in 1986, I believe it is, when the AIDS crisis was really reaching its peak. And just sort of challenging people's, you know, ideologies and thoughts about, you know, ways that you can support the cause, and you know, if you are so motivated to do so, and sort of putting that in the backdrop of a superhero book, and it really does begin to ask the questions of well, if you are the heroes, why are you not doing something to help these people? Why are you not doing something to sort of, you know, fight this battle? You know, you can save someone from a falling building and all that stuff. So it's interesting. I'm curious to see where it goes. It's not super far into what the conversation would ultimately be, But it's enough to sort of keep me engaged, so I'm probably going to keep going forward with it. So, but I strongly recommend it because it is asking a question that I think we've all talked about in the past. So that's kind of what I got.
Have you read Black Hammer then?
I have read – I'm trying to think what I read. I remember reading it on the treadmill, so I remember. But
yeah, because that's where he gets his – that's where he's from originally, and so this must be before Black Hammer happens.
Oh, okay. So this is a Dark Horse book. It's one of those.
Yeah, Dark Horse. Sorry, yeah, it's Jeff Lemire's. It's the Black Hammer universe. So they did two series, and Barbalian was the Martian Manhunter, and they're stuck in a small town, and they play with this dynamic there as well. So
okay, it's all coming back to me. Yeah, I remember reading the first Black Hammer and loving it.
Yeah, and then they did a second series, and then they ended it with a crossover with the Justice League.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, and then they've been doing, like, backstories here and there of all the different heroes, and I usually just wait till they're all collected and then go in and read them. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to this one.
Okay, now it's coming clear to me because I did read it. I borrowed it from Comixology Unlimited. I just checked.
Yeah.
I literally just checked while you were talking.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's again Jeff Lemire doing his best independent stuff rather than the big two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was an interesting question to be asked, let's challenge some of these ideas of superheroes and how they would react to some of these real world issues.
That's Black Hammer's kind of shtick, right? Like from the top he's presenting these like corollaries to heroes that we kind of recognize and really deconstructing them. That book was because Jeff Lemire, like at the same time as he was doing Black Hammer, like he was also on like Hawkeye and X-Men, like he was doing his Marvel stuff at the same time. Yeah. And I was like, bro, like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah. I just love the Mary Marvel where she's like a 70-year-old woman, but she's stuck as like an 8-year-old, and she's walking around smoking and drinking.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, that was a great book.
Seven Secrets is also so good.
Tom Taylor's a gem. God, that guy's great. His books are awesome.
Yeah.
That book just took off.
I did like the twist, though, how it kind of went from, like you were saying, the hidden society to becoming something more. And I hope it's ongoing. I hope it goes further than where it is right now.
I think it has to. I think we're going to open all those briefcases.
No, you can't.
Hey, well, I thought we were going to get an open briefcase.
No, I did too.
In this issue. I thought it was going to happen.
Well, they did, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. What are you talking about?
But they didn't tell you what was inside. They didn't
It's like Seven. You don't want to see what's in the box.
You have to wait for Howie Mandel to show up with all those models.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. All right. Fine. All right. We don't have to see what's in, like, get that Quentin Tarantino thing going on. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And Legion of Superheroes is simply Bendis being self-indulgent. But with Ryan Sook on the art, I'm there. I don't care how long that book goes. I'm going to read every issue.
Well, I'm surprised that, like, what's really confusing to me about the Future State stuff is some books are still happening and other books are obviously on this hiatus. Mm-hmm.
I think it was just delayed.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was just Sook's art takes a while, and I think it's just delayed, and I think it's coming back. They're just getting a few issues in the bank before they do that.
Exactly. So I don't know. Again, I don't know who this book is for, but it's still fun to look at and see who's going to pop up.
Yeah.
It's like 3,000 heroes, right? Like okay, who should go next? Let's make me go next, and then John, since he's new to the show, he can round out the landing rounds. I'll go next here. I have a lot of books on my list because I wasn't on the show last week, but I'm going to move through them pretty quickly, I think. Okay, so imaginary timer set for me. Lightning sound effect. Okay, here we go. I'm going to start with Iron Fist, Heart of the Dragon. We talked about this book a couple of weeks ago. I was kind of excited about the announcement. This is number one of six, I think. This is from Larry Hama and David Wachter with Niraj Mano on colors. There's a line in this book. Iron Fist is fighting Taskmaster, and Taskmaster, of course, is like, "Aha, I got you, Iron Fist." And Danny says, and I quote, "Your poultry tally may be presumptuous." And that's when I knew I didn't know what the heck was going on here. So Heart of the Dragon. So first of all, Larry Hama, legend. I will give him that. The book is it's surprisingly building a lot on Kara Andrews' Iron Fist Living Weapon runs, which is kind of like the most recent Iron Fist stuff. So like Pei is in there, who's like this little girl from Kunlun, like the last survivor of Kunlun and a future Iron Fist. Luke does show up. There's some Power Man stuff in here too. As I mentioned, Taskmaster's there, Lady Bullseye. Here's the thing. Iron Fist, Heart of the Dragon is literally about hearts of dragons. Oh. And the bad guys are hunting down dragons and cutting out their hearts. Like if you thought it was going to be a metaphor, it's not a metaphor. They're literally hunting down hearts of dragons. There's some Immortal Weapon stuff in here, some cameos. It's not necessarily the best, but I like Iron Fist, so I'm excited to read it. It was fun. I will say this, and I realized this while reading it. So between Larry Hama and Kara Andrews, and then like the actual Iron Fist kind of Immortal Weapon stuff that Brubaker and Fraction did with David Aja back at in the OOs, and then obviously the Netflix series, I don't actually have a feel for Danny Rand's voice. And that's a weird thing to say, but there's something about that character that I feel like no one really knows like what he sounds like. And every time I read a book, it's different. Mm-hmm. And actually besides the Brubaker Fraction run that I had a ton of fun with, the time I really liked Danny Rand was when David Walker was doing it on Power Man and Iron Fist. That was fun. And there's something about Iron Fist, Heart of the Dragon that I just like poultry tally may be presumptuous. Like, would Danny say that? I don't know. And I think that's part of the problem. But if you're hankering for some Iron Fist, I think it'll prove to be an interesting read. Two quick hits from the Future State here. Future State, The Next Batman, number two. John Ridley and Laura Braga continue their Tim Fox Batman story. Vita Ayala, who we're big fans of on the show, and Aneke tell a really cool spoiler Cassandra Cain story too, with some like real twists and turns that I was not expecting. I started reading, there's a third story in here because The Next Batman is like their $8 book. There's a Gotham City Siren story in here that I started reading and I kind of stopped reading because I didn't really didn't really vibe with me. And because the Catwoman that appears in that third story is very different from the Future State Catwoman issue that Ron V and Otto Schmidt did on the same day. Like they both released on the same day. And that Catwoman that they write and the Catwoman that appears in that Gotham City Sirens and Next Batman are like two totally different characters. Because the Future State Catwoman issue is awesome. Like, first of all, Otto Schmidt's artwork on point. Like it is always fantastic, but like this is just like on another level. I was getting actually like some like Tim Sale vibes from this, and I really liked it. More magistrate stuff, you know, they're taking like the ne'er-do-wells on a train to some reformatory, and Selina's like, I'm stealing that train. So she like drives her motorcycle, jumps on the train. She's got like some helpers helping her out. High energy, tons of twists and turns. Like it is action packed. It actually makes me, now that I have DC Universe Infinite, it makes me want to go back and read Rom V's Catwoman, because I know he picked up after Joel Jones and then after the run that Bob stopped reading. I know that Rom V picks up there too. So my understanding is that like Future State Catwoman picks up nicely from his Catwoman stuff. So it makes me want to go back and read that, which, I mean, that's, I think, pretty cool. Quick hit on Cable number 7, Jerry Duggan and Phil Noto. Cable, great. Looks beautiful. Phil Noto doing some great work. Remember that storyline with like the Cult of X stealing X babies? They wrap that stuff up in one issue here. Issue 7, they're like, hey, remember that storyline from before X of Swords? We're wrapping it up. Done. And they move on. So it was really cool. Really great issue there too. Reckless as well. I know that, John, you read this too, so I don't want to talk about it too much. And it's also the first of three Reckless volumes. from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillip with Jacobs Phillips. This is their new kind of like hard-boiled crime caper character. Mm-hmm. The character's name is Ethan Reckless, which is like preposterous, but whatever. And it's got everything. It's got like, you know, everything you expect from a Brubaker Phillips book, and a really kind of shocking twist at the end, which, like, having read so many Brubaker Phillips books, I should have known. Like, I should have known not to trust that character. And they got me anyway. But look, you know what you're going to get from the two of them. It's just, it's incredible. And like I said, we're going to get two more volumes. I also really like this model that they're working with. They're like, we're going to tell these long form stories. We might tell them serialized, but like, we're going to work in bigger chunks. And I'm totally fine with that. I will wait for a Brubaker Phillips book. Yep. Last thing I'll talk about very quickly is because WandaVision has just consumed the conversation, I went on to Marvel Unlimited and I just like typed in Vision and I typed in Scarlet Witch. And I was like, well, I've already read Children's Crusade and I've already read Visions and I've already read Scarlet Witch, the volume that happened was that Tom Taylor? Or no, was it James Robinson?
James Robinson.
That was also great. So I was like, let me kick it old school. And I went back to the Steve Englehart and Richard Howell Vision and Scarlet Witch from 85 and 86. Technically, this is the second volume. But this is the one where, like, you know, it's a year in the life and they go come and live in New Jersey and they have a house and Wanda gets pregnant and they have babies at the end. And what's really cool about it is like every issue is like a new like holiday. Like there's a Halloween issue and a Thanksgiving issue and a Christmas issue. And then there's like a Martin Luther King Day issue where like Luke Cage shows up and he's like, I have my own holiday. And I was like, man, the 80s was a time. Like you could say things like that. And it was like, cool. And then there's like a Tax Day issue because why not? And Spider-Man shows up. It's a lot of fun. The thing I love about it, reading it, is like all the kind of weird and fun stuff that WandaVision is playing with in a totally different context. You can see it here back in 85, 86, which is, I think, really cool and kind of shows how much these shows and these movies are drawing from this kind of wealth of stories, including kind of the big moment at the end of issue 12, which also happens in WandaVision episode 3 with the birth of the baby. Spoilers if you haven't watched WandaVision. Sorry. I know Steve gives a spoiler alert. Spoiler alert! -3, -1 from before, with the babies as well and the twins. Like it's almost like beat for beat, which is pretty cool. Obviously, without in the comics, Doctor Strange somehow delivers babies, even though that's not his like doctor job. Anyway, we won't get into that. The other crazy thing I loved about Vision and Scarlet Witch is that there's something about these like Marvel comics and superhero comics from like the 80s where like Doctor Strange doesn't just like show up in the issue. Like Doctor Strange like gets a page of the issue where he's like clearly doing something else and you like watch it happen. And then he's like, I should go visit Vision and the Scarlet Witch. So like there's like a 3-page spread where he's like fighting this dude who's like trying to like put the whole universe into darkness. And then like he warps the bad guy literally into eternity. And I'm like, what is happening? And then at the end of the sequence, Dr. Strange is like, glad that's done. I'm going to go visit my friends in New Jersey. And I'm like, that would not fly in like superhero comics today. And I'm going to be honest, I kind of miss that.
I miss it.
Yeah. There's just like a kind of freedom to like this, like, freewheeling universe that now you don't necessarily have. But anyway, Vision and Scarlet Witch, if you're loving WandaVision, I would go back and read it. I think it's a ton of fun. Quicksilver has some great moments. There's drama. Quicksilver and Crystal have like this crazy affair thing. It's wild. There's like this, it's wild. It's a wild time, Vision and Scarlet Witch. In fact, I take it back. You should read Vision and the Scarlet Witch volume 2. It is a fun time. So anyway, that's my extended lightning round. Thank you for indulging me. I'll talk about WandaVision 2, but John, I know you read Reckless.
I loved it, right? Yeah, I talked about it last week. I love the 80s setting for a little bit different for those two. And I'm a junkie for those 80s action movies, and this just kind of fit that itch I had. And yeah, the twists and turns, you should have seen it coming from page one, but they got you again.
Yeah. I thought they were doing an American Beauty thing. Like, he's narrating and I'm like, this dude is dead. Spoilers for American Beauty. I'm just spoiling everything tonight. But you know what? Kevin Spacey is in that movie. You don't have to watch it.
Nobody should watch a Kevin Spacey movie.
But anyway, like, I was like, because I don't know. I don't know with those guys. Brubaker and Phillips, like, you have no idea. Even though you've been doing this shtick for so long, like, anything could happen. I remember reading Kill or Be Killed, and then all of a sudden there was like monsters, and I was like, what the hell? And then Fatal takes some turns, and Velvet. Oh my goodness, is wild.
Yeah.
Anyway, Reckless. Read it.
And there's going to be three of them.
Ethan Reckless. Three of them.
Three of them this year.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And I love I grew up reading comics in the 80s, and you know, that's Doctor Strange, where it's three pages in that issue. That'd be like, it'd be like a 12-issue miniseries. And that would be like one issue all of itself would be him like fighting something. And they're like, no, we're just going to go now. They got so much jammed in back then.
Yeah. And also Toad is like the main antagonist of the series, which like makes sense because like when they were in the Brotherhood, Toad was like obsessed with Scarlet Witch. And I understand that, but like, Englehart goes out of his way to be like, Toad is a serious bad guy, everyone. Like, he's like he stole machines from an alien, and he's like got all these, and I'm like, he's Toad though, like come on. But like, he's pretty intimidating. It's pretty crazy. I loved it. Oh my goodness. I did not. And the other thing that I really liked about it too is first of all, Wonder Man is, I'm so glad that guy like never shows up anymore. I'm over Sunderland. but anyway, I the thing that I also really liked about it is, first of all, I think Scarlet Witch is a really great character, but Vision is funny in the book, and I can see Paul Bettany's Vision coming from this iteration of that character. He like has weird pet names for Wanda. Because they do the thought bubbles in the 80s as a convention. And like, he has all these thoughts where he's like so dramatic about being human. Every couple of pages, he's just like, this is what it's like to be a man. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. It's absurd. But it's played so straight. And I think it's so good.
I love back then when they would they just put a sweater over the Vision's costume, so he has that huge high collar, and then he's just wearing like a regular sweater.
Yeah, his Mr. Rogers sweater, yeah.
Yeah, it's just so silly.
Oh, in the Tax Day issue, Peter Parker, first of all, in his black suit, is like swinging across the Washington Bridge, hitches a ride with some like folks going to the Jersey Shore, preposterous already to begin with. He's like, it's too nice a day to hang out on a bus. I'm like, what is happening? And then he's like, he shows up at the Visions in Leonia, New Jersey. And he shows up as Peter Parker, and he's like, I'm here to take pictures. And he's like, Vision, why did you agree to J. Jonah Jameson to take pictures of your house? And Vision literally says, he's like, well, we quit the Avengers, so we're not getting paid anymore. And tax day's coming up, so we got to pay our taxes. And I'm like, this is so ridiculous.
It stands world outside your window. Come on. Even superheroes have to pay the bills.
It was I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Oh,
I have to go back and reread. I haven't in a very long time, but it's a goodie.
There's a four-issue miniseries like a year or two ahead of that with Bill Mantlo and Rick Leonardo. That's fun too. But the one Joey read is the far superior.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes a while. You know, I've been reading it for the last 2 weeks because first of all, those issues are just packed with storytelling. Like it's just absolutely loaded. You know, and it's like, I was just riveted. I love the characters. Bob, did you get a chance to read the next Batman issue?
Yes, I did. Or? Love the first story. Love where we're going with all that. And I'm with you on that last story. the Gotham City Sirens thing. It's cute in its own way, but it didn't catch me particularly. It might be the second story to go with that, which will come out, I guess, in issue 4. But Vita Ayala's Batgirl story was a standout. It's great to see Stephanie and Cassandra in this. Orange is the New Bat story, I guess you want to call it. I had to go there.
Good.
But it's lots of twists and turns. Things are not what they seem, and it's really disconcerting to see Stephanie in that position. Really well done.
It's another one where I should have known.
Yeah,
that story started, and I was like, Vita, you got me. Because I was like, wow, this magistrate stuff's really messing with all our favorite characters.
Yeah, there are a lot of them in this prison. There is a lot of cameos.
You know, the magistrate stuff is – we'll talk about a Wonder Woman a little bit later as well. But the magistrate stuff I think is something that I kind of would have got behind in a Batman, like – family storyline. I think there's something about it that, you know, this like hyper police state takes over, tries to boot all the masks, like it's a high tech thing, and it's matching Batman for, you know, every step for step. Like that's something that I could see playing out and being really interesting to read, especially because I think where it's leaving all of the other characters. I did read Nightwing as well, and Nightwing, not necessarily a strong issue, but like, you know, kind of just, it's something that I find very interesting that like all the Future State Bat books are revolving around this storyline that was so clearly meant to be this like overarching crossover. Mm-hmm. And now we're getting it like jam packed into a month. And I it's something that I almost wish had room to breathe because I it's one of the things from Future State that I find very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have the feeling this would have been the 5G universe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there was I forget where I saw it now, but there was a timeline for where all these books are taking place, and all these Bat books are in 2025.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which now that makes a whole lot of sense. The other ones are scattered through the millennium.
Right.
But this does have that feel like this would have been a storyline you could have told for a year, 2 years, 3 years worth of stories and then come back around with new heroes or the old heroes back, whatever they want to do. Because it does seem awfully involved to get through this in 4, even giant size issues. There's a lot that's going to get lost.
Again, I don't know if these would have been the creative teams on it, but like John Ridley and Laura Braga, like they are killing it on that Tim Fox story. Like it looks good. I want to know what's happening. There's like family drama there because obviously you got all the Fox stuff, but like him as Batman, not necessarily having the skill set of Bruce Wayne, but like still trying to do the Batman thing. Like I'm engaged. Like I want to know what's going to happen. I'm going to find out over the course of the next 2-3 weeks and then it'll be done. Like no, I don't know what's
that
gonna
book's
happen
continuing.
That one, that story is continuing.
Yeah, that one is. But yeah, this would have been great. Like how they used to do like the Contagion or No Man's Land. They
absolutely.
Just, yeah, just do this.
Yeah. And in this story particularly, you have the overarching large story, but it gets very personal with the couple. I won't say too much for people who haven't read it yet. And their personal story about why they need to take out a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else on anything from my round here? All right, John, it's your time.
All right. I said, my shop was closed, so I didn't get a lot of new stuff. But I went back and I picked up a few weeks ago something called Generation Shattered from DC. And it's Dan Jurgens, Andy Schmidt, and Robert Venditti as the writers. The art it's an 80-page book, so it's got Yvonne Rees, John Romita Jr., Kevin Nolan, Rags Morales, Doug Braithwaite, Emma Lupacino, and multiple others. Colors by Hi-Fi and letters by Tom Napolitano. This is another book that they've tried to link to death metal. It doesn't really work, but DC's going with it. So let's just say everything's collapsing. And so now DC is going to deal with the fallout of their timelines collapsing. And probably 15, 20 years ago, John Byrne did a series of books called Generations, Batman, Superman.
Love
and
those.
They're great. And they're getting collected into one big book here soon. Anyway, it was the idea that Batman and Superman began in the 1930s, and it took them all the way up to the Legion of Superheroes. In a
chronological real time. And so this book basically sets the premise that the DC universe has happened in real time and all of those timelines are collapsing. And so it begins in the future with Kamandi, Jack Kirby creation, The Last Boy on Earth. And it's very similar to the Crisis Wave, where the timeline is collapsing and realities are disappearing. And who would appear but an old Booster Gold and Skeets. And somehow Skeets attaches himself to Kamandi, and they have to go through the time to pick out the heroes to save the day. And so you get the 1939 Batman, you get the 1960s-70 Legion of Superheroes Superboy, you get the pre-villain Sinestro, you get the George Perez and Marv Wolfman 80s era Starfire, you get the post-crisis Dr. Light number 2, and you get a steal from the 1990s Death of Superman. So it's a lot of fun. Great artwork setting this all up. The problem with it is, it's usually when you have those movies where they collect all the heroes in the second act, and this book is about three-fourths of the 80 pages of just collecting the heroes. And then the last few pages, they try to establish some big bad guy that they've done no explanation of who it is, and they bring in a bunch of villains. And I wondered how they were going to stick the landing. And then I figured out, oh, this is going to lead into another series. And I felt a little disappointed that, you have 80 pages to work with. You could have finished this story and then maybe built it into something else. But it's fun. It's pretty. It's got a classic feel to it. And so if you're just looking for some old school superheroics, this might be the book for you. My second book is Future State Shazam. I am a sucker for Shazam stories. Little pudgy John Burkle sitting on the couch in the 1980s, wishing that he could just say a word and suddenly become this massively built superhero. So Shazam, Miracle Man, all of that. I've always had a soft spot in my heart. So this book is writer Tim Sheridan, pencils Eduardo Pansia, inks Julia Ferreira, colors by Marcelo Melio. I should practice this. Letters by Rob Lee. So you got Captain Marvel, and I'm always going to call him Captain Marvel. He is not Shazam. He is Captain Marvel. I understand the copyright issues, but come on, DC. So Captain Marvel wakes up in bed, and he just looks rough. And the big red cheese always looks like, he's the spitting image of the perfect Boy Scout. And this one looks like he's, went on a bender and woke up in some flop house. He's ignoring Mary Marvel's calls. So his sister, Mary Marvel. And so there's just something wrong, and you can feel that there's something wrong. And you flash to the JLA bunker, which is in Detroit, which I love because I might be one of the few people who love the Detroit Justice League of America era. I'm actually looking at the omnibus of it right now, and I'm thinking I might need to read that. So you got Vixen and the Question, and we don't know which Question this is. It's not Montoya, and it's not Sage. I can't think of this person off the top of my head. Yeah, Vic. Dick Sage. Yeah. Anyway, the Question is investigating Billy, and he keeps calling Captain Marvel Billy, and Captain Marvel keeps saying, "Don't call me Billy." So there's some sort of fracture with the Billy Batson Captain Marvel dynamic. And they get called into action before that can be solved. The group of villains are breaking into a prison, and the JLA goes to stop it. And it reveals a lot of what's going on. And it gets into the dynamic of, are Billy Batson and Captain Marvel the same person? Or are they different people who don't occupy the same space at the same time? Because Captain Marvel has been written differently over the years. And some people, it's like a big scenario where Billy is just a grown-up superhero. And other people do it with the Captain Marvel Rick Jones, where they're splitting, one person's in this reality and the other person's in that reality. And it makes for a very interesting reveal at the end of the story that makes me really want to get on board for the second issue. The artwork is very nice. It's very clean. And it's probably one of the Future State books that surprised me, that I enjoyed it as much as I did. And anybody who is a fan of Captain Marvel, this is one that you will probably want to pick up. I'm sorry. If you're a fan of Shazam, you might want to pick this one up. And the last book I read was Sword Number 2. So you got writer Al Ewing, art by Valerio Schiti, colors Martea Gracia, letters VCs Ariana Maurer. Now, I love the first Sword issue, and I love the premise of this space station science team, mutants and humans working together to protect the planet. This, and I like this issue, but it's set during the King in Black. Even though it's not on the cover, it is being embroiled into that crossover, which I'm not reading. And so Earth's been encased in a black symbiote. Communication is cut off except for the Krakoan gates, and Cable has gone missing. And Cable's one of the away team that Abigail Brands tends to use, apparently. So Sword, of course, is working on a scientific and militaristic response. Abigail Brand, Al Ewing really has a grasp of Abigail Brand because she is smart, she is very tactical, and she keeps, you know, she doesn't let everybody in on what she's actually doing, a la Nick Fury in the past. And she's brought in an obscure telepath named Mentallo, who was once fired from S.H.I.E.L.D. for trying to overthrow S.H.I.E.L.D. And she sends an away team through the Krakoan gate to help the mutants on Krakoa, but she sends Mentallo on a secondary mission that, let's just say she's trying to make sure that humans and mutants can continue to survive even if they can't free the Earth. I enjoyed it. I wish the second issue wasn't brought into a crossover. That never goes well, but Ewing did a good job. The art is beautiful. I love the pictures of this, the very technological space station covered in the bio life of Krakoa. Sheedy's art is just fantastic. He gets better and better. He might have been the high point of Empire with his artwork. Is just from where he went with Thor to Iron Man to where it's going now. He has a promising future. So pick it up. It's a good book. Hopefully they get away from the crossover and they get back to what the original mission was here very soon. And I am done.
Nice. Yeah, they tricked me with that Sword issue, man. Yeah. I was reading it and then I read the recap and I was like, why is this recap about King in Black? No! And they got me.
It never works well when you do a crossover in the first two issues. Don't suck it in.
Because like the first issue ended with that like crazy like traipse through time space to get the box.
Yeah.
And I just want to know what's in the box. All these comics. I just want to know what's in the box.
The pyramid. Yeah, I want to know. That's what I love the science. And I love that it's in the X universe because it kind of feels that sci-fi bend that maybe some of the other books weren't filling. And so I think Sword is going to be my replacement to X Factor. I'm just going to go out there and say it. I'm saying it. I read X Factor 6 and I did not need to.
Ooh.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
He's drawn a line in the sand. He has made it clear. Wow. So I have a question.
Yeah.
About Sword. Because I don't know Abigail Brand that well. First of all, like I said, I think in the previous episode, I didn't even know she was a mutant, but whatever. But what do you think this plan was where she was, you know, where she shows up with the five? Because here's my thing. I have said this multiple times, and I know because they keep coming back to them and pointing out how important the five is. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for someone to take them out.
Right, because without them, if one of them's missing, Resurrection's gone.
Exactly.
Hold on. Right. Hold on. 1, 2, 3, spoilers. I think Abigail Brand is trying to get them, so if she can get them off world, then she can continue to resurrect people, even if they lose the Earth.
See, I didn't know if it was that, or if she was making a power play to be able to control Krakoa.
No. Brand, the thing about Brand is like she often plays the role, whether it was Whedon and Cassidy's Astonishing or when Kieran Gillen was doing the Sword series as well. Like Brand always plays that role of like she's the hard ass, you know, bureaucrat, you know, Maria Hill type, right? Yeah. And we can't trust her, but then you can trust her because she's end of the day, she's a good guy. She's a hard ass about it, but she's a good guy.
Well, she's Maria Hill. And she makes the hard decision. She's the one who has to make the, you know, I'm on the wall, this is how we're going to do it decision.
Yeah. I think if it came down to it and Brand was like, I'm going to take the five off world because the Quiet Council has been compromised, she would do that. But I don't think she would power play. She wouldn't power play and steal them away. She wouldn't like steal it away. You know what I'm saying?
No. I don't mean that she would. And you make a good point. I don't mean like she would make a power play for like become ruler of Krakoa. Mm. But rather, I was wondering if she was trying to do it, or at least to take one of them to have to force Krakoa to the table and make them a little bit more compliant with, you know, whatever
her evacuation plans. Or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the problem with Sword number two being a King in Black crossover. Right. I have zero context for King in Black. I have zero context for how this crossover is playing in Krakoa. Who knows?
I will tell you what. Because I have read the two, is it two now or three main King in Black books without reading any of the other tie-ins. Let me tell you, that book is crap. And I say it this way, because it is very clear that if you are not reading one of the other tie-ins, you are missing a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have read it. I know what's happening with Eddie Brock. I know what's going on with his son. I know all the spoilers. 3, 2, 1, everybody's been turned. I know all that stuff. I don't know how. I don't know what happened. And this doesn't give me any sort of insight. I just know all the most powerful mutants have been – put it this way. The big guns have been put to the side, and you don't understand the impact on anything. And if you don't read all the other side books, you don't get it.
You should have just done a King in Black Sword issue and then gone somewhere else with number two, or just fold this into – is there a King in Black X-Men miniseries?
I don't think so.
See, that doesn't make any sense because this isn't happening in any of the other X books.
No, it's not it's a Venom thing though.
Right, but I mean the whole Krakoan, like it looked like it was, you know, ash and burning, and that's just not anywhere else in you know, I always look at the reading order for the Hickman Dawn of X stuff and this just doesn't fit in there.
Yeah. The other thing that's crazy about King in Black is like the crossover books are kind of random. It's like I was reading its Atlantis Attacks and the Agents of Atlas stuff, and then all of a sudden it was like continue the adventures in like King in Black Namor. Ooh. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like totally unexpected. And that like that could be a really cool storyline if like, you know, King in Black was like affecting Krakoa and the Quiet Council was like, we are going to shelter in place and we're not going to leave. We can hold the island. And then Brand is like, no, we need to get the F out. And there's like drama conflict there. And that explains her choices in issue two. Like that would make sense.
Yes.
But without any of that context, especially after coming off of the heels of an issue that was so self-contained and ended on a cliffhanger, it was just very jarring. Sword number two.
Yeah. Yeah.
John, I also read Generation Shattered.
Yeah, what'd you think?
And for good and bad, it is very old-fashioned in the way she described, but then goes completely off the rails into, as you say, there's no real ending.
Right.
I have no feeling about the villain. There's some lovely pages of artwork. You just want to scroll through it. There's some great stuff, particularly the panels of time shattering across all those sorts of things. But I have to tell you, I picked it up without actually looking at what the price was.
Yeah.
It's $10.
Yes.
What?
Yeah. And I did not get $10 of story content out of this book.
And to think I have to go read something else, which I'm not going to go read.
I'm not either. But Generations Forge, they can keep.
When it's in DC Infinite, I'll go through it. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, but, it was a shock. It was sticker shock when I got my bill that week. It was,
right.
Wow, how much is this?
And they are just beating this death metal to it. It's like, this really isn't connected to death metal. Future State is not connected to death metal, but it's plastered all over there. Like, you need to read this to understand that story. It feels like DC's just dumping a bunch of content and they're just holding their breath until March.
Yeah. For those listeners who are new to John, death metal is a trigger word
for him. Clearly. Boy.
I like actual death metal. I don't know.
The music. Yeah, not
my nephew would critique. My nephew's a metalhead, and he was critiquing that I used death metal wrong, and it was some other type of metal. And I was like, fine, buddy, but the death metal comic book is not good. Just not boy. Good. It is a trigger.
just like
every time I see it, someone, like, I think Steve's like, "Well, how's this connected to death metal?" It doesn't. It doesn't at all, Steve.
It doesn't. Well, your eye starts twitching. Oh man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to greener pastures here, Bob. Why don't you take us through Future State, Immortal Wonder Woman number one?
There we go. It is number one of this little series, and it's written by Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad, art by Jen Bartel, and letters by Pat Brousseau. There's also a fine backup story featuring Nubia by Elle McKinney, Aletha Martinez, Mark Morales, and Emilio Lopez that nicely sets that character up for a great arc of her own, which has been long overdue. So let's hope that that's something that survives out of all this. So here we go. Literally at the end of time, Diana stands as the last defender of a dying Earth. Its future, its last fading hope, is an exodus to a new world. Now, this brings her into conflict with her sister Amazons, who wish to stay and fight a last battle against a coming adversary, Darkseid. I was completely taken by this story, which navigates beautifully between a wistful sadness for what's been lost and a resolute hope for a future. That's really encapsulated by Batman's recorded words for Diana. You give them something worth living for, a reason to look to the stars and dream. Paired with incredible artwork by Jen Bartel, this issue really packed an emotional punch for me, and I think alongside Joelle Jones's Future State Wonder Woman and Ella McKinney's Nubia in this issue, the Amazonian branch of Future State is really off to a rousing start. What's everyone else's opinion?
So listen, a couple things. I have not committed to Future State. I will admit I will hit it and quit it for a couple of issues here and there, but I actually really like this issue. I liked it because it was, I don't know. First of all, I love that the Amazons have different body types.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. The Jen Bartel art, again, just makes it look, having read the Batman book where everything was so dark and grim and, you know, enslaved and all that stuff, there is something about even with the big bad that eventually shows up that, you know, it still feels bright and hopeful. I think I will always love a Wonder Woman who honors her history, honors her sisters, honors, you know, her mission, you know, promises to save everyone and does her best to do so. And, you know, tries to choose the, you know, the route that will save the most, you know, as in lieu of, you know, charging into battle. So I don't know. I thought, having read a couple of other Future State stuff, that this was a good breath of fresh air for me. I enjoyed it. I also will take any opportunity to see one of the 10,000 incarnations of Nubia there have been over the, over the years that can't quite seem to stick. So I'm just going to throw it in your ear there, and Kate Jemison and Jamal Campbell. If you all would like to pick up the Nubia mantle, I'm just saying. But, you know, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the read. It was, I didn't feel weighted down by the story as I have with a couple of other Future State books. So yeah. There's that.
What'd you think of Aletha Martinez art on the Nubia story?
I struggled with it a little bit, but I liked some other parts of it. I liked it didn't do all the things that I said that Justice League did, which was to the Future State Justice mm-hmm. League, which was to homogenize the looks of things. I am I, I, it took me a while to set. Well, okay, it took me a while to settle into it coming from Bartel's art.
Okay, yeah, it is very different.
It's very different, but I do like that it does give you a little bit more attention to the details of what a woman of color might look like, and some of the relationships there. So I definitely feel as though, okay, then I'm going to follow up. So I definitely feel as though if you're going to identify, if you're going to represent people of color in the books, represent them in the way that people who would read these books would want to see themselves represented. Amen. So that's, I think that's kind of where I'm going through with all that. Don't represent, don't just, you know, slap another shade of ink on the character and call it a day. But so I appreciated that. I appreciated the hair. I appreciated the muscles. I appreciated, you know, the relationship with her auntie and all those things. So I just, it was a breath of fresh air. Like I said,
cool.
John, did you get to read this one?
I have not. Again, I didn't get any of my new books, so I'm looking forward to it though. So
yeah, that Jen Bartel artwork is unexpected. Anytime she's on interiors, I'm like, what? Yeah. And it is absolutely astounding. Hearing you and Bob talk about the storyline kind of refreshed it in my head. When I read it, I'm up and down on Future State. Like, there are days when I'm like, let's do it. And then there are days when I'm just like, I can't do this right now. And I think I read Immortal Wonder Woman on one of those like kind of off days. There's like 17,000 books, so it should be any day. I read it and I was like, that was cool. I like that. Love the artwork in both stories. Loved seeing the characters as well. But at the end of it, I just had that feeling that I get after reading some of these Future State books where I'm just like, what is my impetus to read this week to week? Like, why pick up issue two, you know, at this point? That's not taking away from how great the story is. I really like, I've read a few stories now over the last year and a half of Wonder Woman at the end of time, looking back on her life. And I love them. I think she's an amazing character. And I think that there's that, I think you use that word wistfulness about it that I really like. And I think Bartel's artwork captures that nuance really well. But then like the big bad shows up and Superman shows up and I'm like, do I have to read issue two? Like, there's more of this. There's a feeling that comes at the end of every Future State issue where I'm just like, I don't know what my next step is after this. And I don't know if that's ever going to go away, but I don't want that to take away from how like really great and really good looking these books are.
It'll go away in a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to, what was the role of Superman in that book?
Well, I think
he's the damsel in distress. Yeah. He's the damsel in distress.
I was going to say, because other than the taking ass whooping, I don't
really Wonder know. Woman will save him next issue.
That's a classic, I think, that's a classic Wonder Woman trope. Like, Superman is in danger. Wonder Woman needs to save his ass. Like,
I mean, he took an ass whooping.
Yeah, even with his Shazam cape, it didn't help him.
And a beard. Did he have a beard?
Yeah.
He had a beard. Superman's got a beard. He's going to get his ass kicked. That's
I like that
Superman has any facial hair. It's not going to go well. Justice League.
I love we have Swamp Thing having a lovely appearance that doesn't involve vegetative injustice.
Oh, that was beautiful. Yeah. That was a beautiful moment.
That's what I was talking about with promising to save everyone.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah. Oh, what are you going to do?
Wait for 2 weeks or so and the next issue will be out. And the last issue will be out.
It's only two? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other thoughts on any of our comics from this week?
No, sir.
No.
All right. Let me read through that list one more time. We talked today about Future State Immortal Wonder Woman number one, Sword number two, Future State Shazam number one, Generations Shattered number one, Legions of Superheroes number 12, Seven Seekers number six, Barbalian, Vision and Scarlet Witch volume two, Future State Catwoman, Future State Next Batman, Cable 7, Iron Fist, Heart of the Dragon, number one, Reckless, Batman, Catwoman, number two, Miskatonic, number three, and Abbott, 1973, number one. That's a good list. That's a lot of comics today.
Yeah.
That's quality.
That's good. That's good. I didn't talk about WandaVision, episode three. Ooh. It was good. I liked it a lot.
Spoiler alerts.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil anything. Here's what I'll say. Y'all were talking last week about all this stuff, about like, oh no, Wanda's not the bad guy. Wanda's the bad guy. I knew that from second one. I knew that from 2005's House of M, when that terrible human was like, no more mutants. And I was like, Scarlet Witch, you're the bad guy. And I've known that since that moment. Just saying.
You're right. I'll admit it. You're right, Joey.
Also, it's definitely AIM, y'all. They're the beekeepers showing up. And then there's everything's hexagons. Hexagons everywhere. Hexagons.
Gotta love some hexagons.
I just wanna know who Herb is.
Herb, okay, so here's what I think. You know, I don't know what I think about them. I don't know what I think about the townsfolks. There's a lot of options there. I got a lot of theories.
Well, what about Dottie being Dottie from Clea. Agent Carter?
No,
I think it's Clea.
No. Oh,
Doctor Strange's.
You said that last week.
Yeah.
I was like, that's wild. Y'all were spitting this madness, multiverse of madness.
I had him in the quantum realm, Joey. So.
Maybe Herb's the Grim Reaper.
I was thinking Dr. Voodoo or Brother Voodoo. And Agatha Harkness.
Master Drum was in Doctor Strange. He didn't last very long.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that they are. Here's what I think. I think that we're going to get strung along and it's going to be like, oh no, this is all spoilers, folks, for y'all at home. It's going to be like, oh, it's Agatha Harkness, or like, oh, it's this person, or oh, it's that person doing this. But it's going to end up being Wanda at the end. And it's going to be like big reveal. It's been her all along. And I think what's happening is she might have been like, you know, like caught by AIM or whatever and, you know, triggered and activated this whole thing. And now they've lost control of it. But it's her. She's doing it. I'm telling you, everything's red and hexagons and blah, blah, blah. And she's creating all this stuff, especially because I don't think Vision's coming out of this, y'all. No. I think he's a figment of everyone's imagination.
I still think last scene, Doctor Strange shows up to help.
Be a nice little tie-in.
And then it leads. And I'll be honest, my wife and I watched Doctor Strange over the weekend, and it gets better as it ages, I'll be honest. I enjoyed it more this time around, but I'm interested in how him and Wanda's dynamic going forward, because she's in the next Doctor Strange, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're filming now.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
Speaking of movies that age better, I don't want to say better, that aren't as bad. We watched Thor: The Dark World yesterday or 2 days ago.
It has good stuff in it.
Yeah.
That movie, which used to be so boring to me, after Endgame, when all of a sudden Thor: The Dark World becomes an incredibly important film for like no reason.
Yeah.
That movie, I think, gets a little bit better. I also like talked through the whole thing and like was like, like joking about stuff the whole time. So I think that helped too, but I didn't hate that movie. Anyway, WandaVision number three was awesome. WandaVision episode three was great. Huge twists and turns.
Geraldine.
Went places I did not expect. And I think my understanding is that episode four is going to do much of the same, kind of just like taking us to a totally different perspective and kind of flipping the point of view, which is exciting. Yep. I mean, if you think about, there's 9 episodes. We're through the first act, essentially, if we're thinking in terms of 3 acts. So I'm excited to see where it goes. I think that the plan for us on the show, Steve and I were talking about, I think that we're probably not going to talk about it every week, and we might wait until like the end to talk about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just out of because, you know, some people binge at different paces. But I think that, so what I heard was that all the reviewers that got like advanced copies of the show got the first three episodes. So that's why like the rave like reviews about it, I think, took into account what happens in episode three. Because at the end of episode two, I was like, this is really cool and really awesome. I wonder where it's going. The reviews are incredibly positive. And I think that knowing now that the reviewers got to watch the first three episodes makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
Yeah.
Does this
okay. Go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to say, does this make Herb the actual magical Negro?
Absolutely.
Yes. Oh, yes, it does.
Okay. Just curious.
He was trying to hedge clip through a yellow brick wall.
Yeah. Well, not well, a Agnes is sitting on a bicycle that looks just like the Wicked Witch's human alter ego.
A lot of references there.
It's the magical commune. It's the magical commune.
I have no idea. Not a clue. I don't know what's happening.
I don't know. I just hope.
And I'm excited.
I'm just glad that they're going to do a sitcom motif for all nine episodes. So.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. Yep.
Should do a Good Times one.
Oh, yes.
I would love it if, so they do the sitcom episodes.
Does it end with like, Friends?
No, the episode that has like Randall Park and the sword, like per point of view, they do like a cops episode where it's like, you know, like it's like a handheld camera following them around and they're like, there's this giant thing. We got to go find it. We got this call. And it's like, just like totally inept sword agents, like, on an episode of Cops trying to, like when X-Files did that crossover with America's Most Wanted, that's what I want.
I just had the worst image of Married with Children.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, what's the 80s going to be? Like,
Cheers. The early 90s. They're just at the bar.
Yeah. Seinfeld, it's an episode about nothing.
Yeah.
Oh,
oh God. You can do
they can do it.
They can. They can do it all.
Yeah. What if we did a sword episode and it's like Miami Vice in pastel colors with a Jan Hammer soundtrack?
What if they do Modern Family and they just like age up the kids like a lot?
Ooh.
Interesting.
Mm.
Gossip Girl.
Pretty Little Liars.
The kids go to high school and it's 90210.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a little Melrose Place action. Yeah.
All right. It's good. Episode. We're not going to do this every week.
No. Yeah, we promise. No, yeah. We stop. We're stopping now. We're stopping.
All right. Last thing to talk about today. Right before or earlier today, earlier Tuesday, Marvel kind of tweeted out and sent out this kind of crazy thing, which was just like, vote for the last member of the X-Men team. Okay. If you've been reading the X-Men books after X of Swords, you know, Cyclops and Jean Grey are like, we're going to make a new X-Men. And Professor X is like, who's going to be on the team? And they're like, we're going to vote. And it's like, okay, so here's Marvel's press release. In 2021, Mutant Kind will be selecting the first X-Men team of the Krakoan Age, and you are invited to take part in the election. Marvel's fan vote will be 100% responsible for the determination of the final member of this inaugural team, so choose wisely, as your choice will have an everlasting effect on the future of the X-Men and the world at large. Voting will be open from 12 a.m. January 27th to midnight February 2nd. And here are the X-Men that are eligible to be the final member of the team. Banshee, Polaris, Forge, Boom Boom, Tempo, Cannonball, Sunspot, Strong Guy, Marrow, or Armor. The list to which Bob replied...
Where are the X-Men? Are the real X-Men on this list?
And we were like the shade there. Bob, wow. I think it's cool. I think it's a cool thing. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. There is no way that this vote is actually going to lead to an X-Men being on the team. I don't know. Maybe I'm just cynical about it. But what are they going to like pencil him in last minute before they publish the book? What's the plan here? Yeah.
Victor,
I don't know who the Strong Guy or Marrow are. I don't even know who that is.
Oh, 1990s X Factor and X Men.
Strong Guy was an X Factor, Peter David's X Factor. Yep. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Marrow, like, grows bones out of her body and throws them as weapons.
She was in the Scott Lobdell, Joe Madureira era of X Men.
Yeah.
90s.
She's like, yeah, really iconic 90s look, kind of like pointy, like pink hair. Yeah. Tempo, that's kind of the oddball on the list. Mutant Liberation Front. She's I had like the Topps trading card of Tempo. She was holographic. She looks like a golden bullet. Like she's like she wears a golden bullet for a helmet.
Okay.
And a golden like bodysuit and just moves really like fast. Mm. I think.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
Anybody who's everybody voting for?
Polaris.
There's only one right answer.
All right, Legion. John.
Gentlemen of the panel. Other than Cyclops, there is only one mutant who bleeds black and yellow Xavier colors, and that is Sam Guthrie, Cannonball. He is the only choice to be on the X-Men in this X-Idol, whatever they want to call it.
You know, I my vote is for Armor. These books are already made. Always I love
maybe
when they
Hugo
got
Chavez like has already figured this out 7 years ago.
Yeah. I like when they have a kid X-Men on the team. So put Armor on the team is my vote.
Yeah, that's okay.
You're like, You need Boom Boom. You need a drunk.
Oh.
That's true, though. She is pretty intoxicated in New Mutants every month.
Basically.
I mean, if we're talking like veteran status, like Banshee technically is the giant size all new X-Men team.
Right. But does all that exist now in this reality in the ninth of all the of Moira McTaggart's
The ninth.
Yes, this is the ninth iteration
or the tenth life.
I think is it the how many has she has what how many 11 or something like that
because the tenth life is the current life that we've been reading and living this entire time.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to figure out. I didn't know if this was the ninth or the tenth. Does she have 11 then?
I think this is the last.
No,
one.
I think the tenth. Yeah.
Yeah,
because there was one more. Okay.
Also, where's Moira been at?
She's coming back. She's in her little bunker on Krakoa. I think she's going to be coming up in one of the new issues of something. They got Brett Booth doing X-Men art tomorrow. That's like pure 90s. Maybe it should be Marrow.
Well, sorry. This goes back to my question. Like, all right, so John Hickman, Lionel Francis Yu, they're doing X-Men. Is Lionel Francis Yu really waiting on a vote to draw
he's
in
leaving the book.
Someone? Or whoever?
Yeah.
He has little side pals he hasn't quite finished yet.
My second thought is, are they going to be like, vote for your X-Men? And then they're going to be like, who's going to die?
Oh,
no. It's like the Jason Todd 1-900 number.
Yeah.
No, he has already written 10 versions of this. They're already sitting there. So as soon as the votes come in, it's like, okay, publish that one.
Yeah.
He's got like the 10 different panels and there's just one guy walking through the background and
exactly.
10 different people.
That's why it's not like a free form write-in battle scenario. It's like, we got our 10 books already. You just tell us which one we're going to push forward.
Yeah. And the headshots are actually like thumbnails that have already been drawn and are in the issue that
drop
are being published.
Yeah.
Whoever you vote for will not have a speaking role for about 6 issues, but they will be on the X-Men team.
Yeah. Or there'll be generic bubbles. Hi, Cyclops.
They'll be put in like, they'll be slapped in like Bernie Sanders.
Everywhere. All right. So Bob says Polaris. John obviously says Cannonball, sensing a little bias there. I voted Armor, and Aaron, you said Boom Boom.
If I can't say Legion, I'm saying Boom Boom.
You can't go off list.
Have we seen Legion in the Krakoan stuff?
No, and that's what's annoying me.
He hasn't been resurrected.
They're scared.
Yeah. There's a list of people they can't resurrect because of fear of what they'll do.
Interesting.
Because he owns their asses every single time. They're like, if they were smart, they would have brought him out during Exo Swords and shut that whole thing down. But
crazy.
No.
Anyway, the voting opens today. today, and you can vote until next week on Marvel.com for your X-Men that will appear in the background of the new X-Men team. Look, as long as Cyclops is on the team, I'm fine. Let's do it. Scott Summers, I'm there for. He's my ride or die. Let's go. But hey, check that out.
Do you think Professor Xavier looks at Scott and is like, "Bitch, you killed me," but I'm gonna let it go.
That was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's something wrong with Charles Xavier anyway. So
yeah. Oh, Aaron and I were at that panel.
Yeah.
Yes, Aaron
and I were at that panel where someone was like, "What's up with Professor Xavier?" And John Hickman was like, "There is no reason to believe that the Professor Xavier you see in the X-Men books is not Professor Xavier." Wink, wink.
Exactly. We're like, okay, you bastard.
Yeah.
Like, we get it.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I don't know what the end game is. We'll see. I'm along for the ride. It's been a riot so far. Also, yeah. Strangely enough, there's a whole Phoenix thing going on over in the Avengers books, and I have no idea what's
Ignore
happening
it.
There.
It's not. It's
Ignore
not.
It.
Which will be followed
it's,
by
it's
Heroes Reborn again.
Yes.
Yes.
This is Jason Aaron.
He's doing what he wants. He's doing.
Yeah,
what
he does what he wants now. He's reached that status of writer.
All right, so before we go, let's talk about the books that we are going to be picking up this week and any final remarks we have. Bob, what are you picking up this week?
Light Week, Fantastic Four number 28, Captain Marvel number 25, and what might be the last issue of Deadpool number 10.
Yeah. Aaron, what's on your list?
So I got X-Men 17, Fantastic Four 28, Excalibur 17, New Mutants 15, Captain Marvel, whatever that is, Department of Truth, whatever that is. I didn't write it down. Strange Academy number 7. The one I'm most excited for, The Other History of the DC Universe number 2. Legion of Superheroes Future State, because I'm just curious. And Shang-Chi.
Nice. John, I know you're up in the air with your shop, but what is on your list this week?
Batman White Knight presents Harley Quinn 4. I will probably do the Future State Dark Detective and Legion. Strange Adventures 8, Daredevil 26, and then all the X books that we said, and Fantastic Four.
Nice. Yeah, definitely Shang-Chi for me. Firefly 25 is supposed to be introducing like an all new cast of characters. This might be my motivator to go back and read Greg Pak's Firefly from the beginning. And I might bring that to the show. We'll see. Future State Batman, Superman, Jean Lun Yang taking over there. I'm excited for that too. Again, you know what? Take back anything negative I said about Future State. I keep reading it anyway, so it doesn't even matter. Oh, gosh. We only find them when they're dead. Something is killing the children in X-Men number 17, obviously, too. Unkindness of Ravens, which was kind of been talked about on and off on the show, is ending this week, too. So I might go back and do a full reread of that one as well. Yeah, there's some fun stuff. Any closing statements from the gang today?
Not from this
corner. Silence. Love it. This is fantastic. Now what's next? Outro. Oh, okay. I read the outro. That's what happens. Okay, so we have reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics Podcast. As always, you can send us comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. It's a new year, so we would love some new questions. We are also on Twitter @TalkingComics. Check out talkingcomicbooks.com where you can find reviews and features from our fantastic contributors. If you like this podcast, be sure to check out Ladies of Valhalla, where you'll catch Sarah, Jess, and Bronwyn on their podcast as well. I don't know what their latest episode is. Steve usually does because he's always like kind of like in the background listening to them record, so he's much better at doing that. We'd also recommend Jeremy Whitley's Progressively Horrified podcast, where Jeremy and his co-hosts Chris Siri and Ben Kahn discuss movies, TV shows, comic books, art, and anything else in the horror genre through a progressive lens. Several of our own co-hosts on the podcast have been on that show. And I'll leave it there. Bob, where can listeners find you?
Old-fashioned email at bobreyer@talkingcomicbooks.com. And, of course, on one episode of Jeremy Whitley's podcast.
Aaron, where can our listeners find you?
At Aaron J. Amos.
John!
Hold on a second. I think I got an email from Whitley here. At John P. Burkle on Twitter.
Sarah is at Geek Country Lady. Jess is at Jarsica. Brahman's at Shiny Baby B. Steve is at Dead_Anchorus. And I am at Jerry Ricino. So, for Bob.
Happy days.
For Aaron.
February 12th, progressively horrifying.
For John.
See you later.
I have been Jerry Ricino. Steve will be back next week, reining this nonsense in. Crazies. So until the next time on the Talking Comic Books podcast, be excellent to each other and to be continued.
That one particularly, Godzilla's a force of nature.
Yeah.
Where the other monsters are Japan's guardian monsters, and Godzilla is just wrecking stuff. And Baragon and Mothra, and you eventually get Ghidra, all trying to do the right thing, kind of. And Godzilla is just a nasty piece of work in that one.
Yeah. Mm.
There's that scene with the you remember the scene with the little girl in the hospital who has the broken leg?
John, yeah, I do.
Where he's just wandering through the city and she's trapped in bed and people are looking up at Godzilla and sort of like fleeing populist point of view. And he strides past the hospital and she sort of takes a deep breath and relaxes in bed and his giant tail comes and wrecks the whole joint and kills her.
Oh, wow.
It is brutal.
Yeah, it's brutal.